Yeah, the community piece is not, should not be understated for either business or individual, because I think it's not only is it more fun to do things together, but it's heartening in times. You know, these are challenging times, and can feel overwhelming, can feel paralyzing, can feel isolating. And so I think, you know, 1% for the planet creates a way for people to come together around change, which creates power and momentum, and it enables us to drive more change.
Green Hero. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Green Hero podcast. This is Ricard, founder of Green Hero, your go-to source for making plant-based eating easy and enjoyable. Each week, we'll be digging into the inspiring journeys of people who live a plant-based lifestyle to tease out the most effective and fun ways to add more plants to your life.
Green Hero. Green Hero. Green Hero.
Today's guest is CEO of 1% for the Planet, Kate Williams. 1% for the Planet is a global network of businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations tackling our planet's most pressing environmental issues. It was created in 2002 by Yvonne Chouinard, founder of outdoor brand Patagonia, and Craig Matthews, founder of Blue Ribbon Flies. Kate has served as the CEO since 2015, growing the community scale and impact, as well as deep work on best practices for implementing high-impact giving strategies, growing a network brand while operating a thriving workplace. Kate, welcome, and thank you for joining us on our podcast. I am super curious to hear about 1% for the Planet and how you're making a difference. And of course, I'm interested in hearing more about plant-based eating and how you think that that can help create a sustainable future. But maybe first, like even before getting involved with 1% for the Planet, like how did this journey into sustainability start for you?
Really early on. First, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here. And I would say the journey started, I mean, in some ways, when I was a kid, you know, I grew up in a family where, you know, we were sent outside to the backyard to run around before dinner kind of thing, where my mom would, you know, say, you know, how does each find a secret place in the yard? And it wasn't like it was any big wild wilderness, but, you know, just a connection to the outdoors at a young age through just living. And then more intentionally, when I graduated from high school, I spent time in the big mountains out west and, you know, really had a kind of aha moment of like, I love being out here so much and I love the way I can be out here and I love the way people are together out here. So it was like a people and place thing. And really from that moment on, I just felt like I want to in some way work to protect these places, protect these kind of experiences. Like, you know, and so I've spent my career kind of figuring out like how to do that and learning more about what I mean by that and, you know, continuing to evolve my thinking. But so I would say it's very much like core to sort of who I am and how I've shown up.
Yeah. And I take you didn't grow up in a big city then. You grew up in kind of a smaller place where there was nature around?
Well, I grew up outside of Boston, you know, within like metro Boston. So, you know, we had a yard, but it wasn't like wilderness. It was just a yard, which I, you know, the big mountains really spoke to me in my, like, you know, as a young adult and still do, you know, I love wilderness, but I have like really come back to being, you know, a huge proponent of backyard wilderness, of, you know, a tree outside your, you know, apartment in Brooklyn. I do think for a growing world and a growing population, like really understanding the power of intimate wild nature is super important and really powerful. And those are often the things we get to know best. And so that there's power in that.
Yeah. No, that's such an interesting concept. Never heard about that backyard wilderness. Is that something that you can maybe see with kids now and nowadays as well, that they are getting like more detached from nature, that maybe older generations were kind of more in touch with it, could maybe tell like what are these plants or trees or birds or something like that? Do you think that's a difference in generational?
I do. I mean, I think objectively people just, you know, we spend less time, you know, there are fewer families farming, for example. So there's going to just be less time walking from house to barn and noticing what's along the way kind of thing. There's also, you know, where I might have been sent outside before dinner, you know, there's now screens. And, you know, I know a lot of families are still getting their kids outside when they can, but I think there are many more competing attractions for kids' interests. You know, and what I found to be a really compelling book in my kind of journey was Last Child in the Woods by Richard Loof. It's a really terrific book where he really looks at, you know, the factors and facts of the amount of time kids are spending in connection with nature, and, you know, talks about the fear factor in terms of, you know, our, as parents, you know, our comfort letting our kids sort of stray from home, where it used to be a much larger sort of sphere that, you know, was the norm. So I do think there is, you know, less of a connection, which is why I come back to the backyard wilderness as being so important, because it's a lot harder to say, okay, if there's this disconnection, let's solve it by, you know, getting everyone to the national parks, which are an amazing resource. But that's, you know, the reality of getting everyone to the national parks is obviously, you know, not something that would work for the parks or for people. So what are the local parks? What are the, you know, shared open spaces? What, again, what's the tree outside your window and how do you connect with that?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so getting into that and starting to work more with sustainability, when did you start with 1% for the planet? And like, how did 1% for the planet come to be?
Yeah, I started with 1% 8 years ago. And like, just really briefly, my journey was initially, I sort of focused on connecting people to the outdoors. So I worked as an outdoor educator, mm-hmm. and then I transferred into environmental nonprofits. And that led me to 1% for the planet 8 years ago. And the way we work is that we have a model in which businesses and individuals can become members. And as members, they're making a commitment to give their 1%. In the case of businesses, it's a very, you know, structured process. They commit to 1% of annual sales that they're giving that directly mm-hmm. to environmental nonprofits. And we certify that giving. It doesn't pass through us. We don't operate as a foundation. So we vet the nonprofits. We create a, you know, network of approved environmental nonprofits. And then any donations and any support of those nonprofits coming from the business members, we certify that through an annual process. For individuals, they mm-hmm. make a commitment of their 1%. We don't, you know, verify that with documentation in the same way that we do with businesses, because the value for individuals is different. It's more, you know, we're more of an accountability partner than a certification body. And we mm-hmm. create a community of people who are making that commitment. And we provide, you know, lots of tools and education, and we do a giving circle and things like that.
Interesting. And what are the companies who are interested in doing something like this? Mm-hmm. Are you guys reaching out to people, or are people like, we want to do something for the environment and kind yeah. of find you?
It's a great question. I mean, we've had a lot of the latter, a lot, we call that, you know, organic inquiries coming in inbound, mm-hmm. which is really exciting. So even, you know, over the last couple of years, when we weren't sure in March of 2020, what was going to happen, you know, as I know, much of the world was not sure. And we just saw, you know, significant growth. We had already been growing. And so we have members in all different sectors. We have no more than 10% of our network in any single sector. So we're not like all in the outdoor industry. Mm. We have food and beverage, health and beauty, apparel, you know, we're multiple different, I think we're at 63 different industries at this point. Mm-hmm. And then we have companies of all sizes. So we have a lot of small companies. We have, you know, from zero, so startups, pre-revenue, to $1 billion companies, which mm-hmm. we really value, because we really believe this is a commitment that any business can and ultimately should make, in the sense that you pay your staff, you pay the rent, and you, through 1% for the planet, you're donating to nonprofits that is effectively kind of paying planet and people as part of our economic system, which we feel is really important and long overdue. So last year, our tally of total members at this point is more than 5,500 globally. And last year, we mm-hmm. certified more than $50 million US dollars in giving.
Mm, wow.
So very exciting to see, you know, that scale, and we're looking to keep it growing.
Yeah. And how can people see that, the journey as well? You're saying like you certified this amount of money, but can people see this on your website, for example? Is there a story kind of telling how this whole thing works?
Yeah, so our website has a lot of great information. It's 1%fortheplanet.org, all spelled out. And we have, you know, a lot of information about how the model works. We have a facts page that gives, you know, we update every quarter, that gives a snapshot of where we are, who we are, how much certified giving is, you know, in process, you know, things like that. We also have great stories on our blog page about, you know, what are the partnerships between members and nonprofits that are driving change? What are some of the different ways to think about environmental giving? You know, over the last couple of years, we've really expanded our definition to include, you know, a broader environmental justice lens. So there's a lot of great information on the website. I would definitely encourage people to check it out.
Mm-hmm. And when you connect with companies, like, what is the reason that they say, like, we want to do this? Like, do they feel like they want to give back, or do they feel it's good for their brand to just be giving away money? Like, what do they think?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because it varies a little bit, but the kind of range of the values that brands realize and seek by becoming members, one is, you know, for many, and this was particularly true early on, it's like there was a sense of just like rightness, like this is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if it's good for business or not, this is the right thing to do. Increasingly, we're really seeing that there doesn't need to be that perception of a trade-off. It's like, is a something that companies can feel good about, that their employees can feel really good about. And the brand value is really strong. Not only is the 1% for the Planet logo a third-party certification that's, you know, really signals this brand is not just saying they're doing something good. You know, we are certifying that every single year they're giving at this high level. So it's really powerful. And then their partnerships, like their particular giving strategy, gives them amazing stories to share in the context of their brand. And that leads to another one of the values, which is, it's actually, even though, you know, sometimes, you know, when you haven't gotten into this, you may think, oh, it's easy to give, you know, to have money and give it away. It's actually can be challenging to figure out, like, how do you give strategically? How do you give in ways that drive the impact that matters most to you, or that aligns with your brand, or that aligns with other, you know, problems you're trying to solve? And so, you know, that's what we've been doing for 20 years. So our team is able to help develop those giving strategies, which is a big value. And then I would say another one is the community. It's a really amazing, as you can imagine, amazing group of companies. And so the access to peers who, you know, are often figuring out or wrestling with some of the same challenges, and to, you know, be able to say, how did you solve for this? So, you know, we do see a lot of nice interactions between and among the brands. And we, now that things are opening up again, we're starting to host some of our events that facilitate this coming together and opportunity for conversation.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that too, like how you were facilitating that and like creating the community itself. Is there some kind of conference that you do, or is it workshops or something like that?
Yeah, we just in March had our global summit that we had initially had scheduled for March of 2020. So, you know, we've been kind of kicking that down the road for a while. So it was a very awesome moment to get together. And it was really right at the front end of people kind of coming back into gathering spaces. So there's amazing energy, and our network has just like amazing connective energy. So that was our global summit. And then we will be now moving into rolling out a event strategy, which will include regional events, a lot of virtual connectivity, because even as the world is opening up, we have such a dispersed global network that, you know, creating ways for us to learn from and with each other and connect digitally is also really important.
Yeah. I mean, I think like so many conferences have seen that as well, that normally they were doing something in person and then the pandemic happened. They did it in digital and they were like, wow, we just reached like so many people we never reached before, you know?
Yeah. we definitely love the opportunities to reach more people and to hone our skills at doing that virtual or digital connection and getting back together again. We realized, or were reminded, like, oh, there is such power in being together in person. So, you know, we're really thinking about like when we do an in-person event, we want to really elevate all of the ways in which the value of being together in person is just so huge. And then, you know, continue to share information, you know, make the kinds of connections that are served well by the virtual platform. So it's been, you know, great opportunity to learn and improve our skills.
Yeah. I wanted to ask one thing about like the global network, because, you know, as we on this podcast also talk a lot about plant-based eating, one thing that we're seeing is that there's so much more awareness in Europe, for example, around the environment. And because of that awareness and because of that, it's in the media much more. there's much more people who get into plant-based eating. So I'm curious to hear as well if this has to do with the environment. Are you seeing certain regions in the world that are more aware of this topic than others? If there's any kind of difference there.
I don't feel like I'm necessarily in the best, like I don't have a data-driven response to that. I will say that I have my own travel experiences and you know, certain cities, and this is true in the US as well, but certain cities, it's much easier to be plant-based than others. It's now nice, you know, that there are so many good, you know, tools on your phone that you can use to sort of track down plant-based options wherever you are. But, you know, I would say my, you know, anecdotal sense definitely backs up what you're saying, that there has been that greater awareness and of it, like of that very distinct connection between plant-based eating choices and environmental sensibility. Whereas in the US, I think, and again, this is, I don't have data on this, but like it's, my sense is that there's a diverse number of reasons that people choose to eat plant-based or vegan, as the term is sometimes also used with, I know, like a, often a different meaning, but I think it seems that there's a like a diversity of reasons from health to, you know, animal rights to planet and environmental issues. So,
yeah. Do you see then that the companies, are they mostly from the US that you work with? Or are they in Europe, Latin America, or Asia, Africa?
Yeah, we're about 50% US, and then we're actually just tipping to more than 50% outside of the US. So truly a global network. Mm-hmm. And we're in about 60 plus countries now. I would say our greatest concentration outside of the US is in Europe, Japan, Australia, and then, you know, growing handfuls in the other countries.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And maybe for people who are listening as well, who work for companies or run companies, they might think like, oh, I have to have all this revenue to be able to give 1%. What size of company do you work with? And like, what would it be like that people can see that they can fit in and do this?
Totally. And I love this question because, you know, I mentioned that 50 million, more than 50 million in giving that we certified last year, which is a big number. Like it's also, you know, in certain ways, not a big number relative to the challenges. But for many people listening who are thinking about their budgets and what they would contribute to that, it might be like, oh, well, that's out of reach. That's not. But what I would say is that number is made up of the 1% of our smallest members to our biggest members. And everyone is equal contributors in the sense that proportionally everyone's giving their 1%. And so whether you're donating $100 or $100,000 and more and everything in between, that's tallies up through our thousands of members to equal that 50 million. So one of the things I love most about our model is that it is very truly democratic in the sense that everyone who participates is a member at the same level, and everyone, you know, contributes to that number, and everyone can point to that number as their certified, you know, the certified giving that they are a part of. So we welcome members of all sizes.
Yeah, well, that sounds good. And when people start working with you, is it also because they are in industries that are more associated to the outdoors or that they are doing things that are plant-based? Or what kind of industries do you see that people like who connect with this as well? What industries are they in?
Yeah, it's a great question and it's shifted somewhat over time. So early on, it was more sort of businesses that you might kind of think of as the usual suspects to participate in something like this, in that they already had sort of built into either the, you know, the product or the service or the brand an environmental message. And there's still certainly some of that. But what's wonderful in my view is that increasingly we're seeing companies who are like, hey, we want to move more in this direction and we want 1% for the planet to help us on this journey. And so, you know, we really believe like our theory of change is we want to engage with as many companies as possible, because if we're just sort of saying we only want to talk to perfect companies who are already doing, you know, everything, you know, environmentally correctly, and, you know, A, those companies don't exist, but, you know, there certainly are companies that are doing so much great work, but, and we welcome them, but we also welcome companies who are like, hey, we want to get better. And 1% can be a really important tool for that. So given that, you know, we have such a diversity of, as I mentioned earlier, of industries, of types of companies who are in different points on their journey toward greater sustainability and environmental sensibility. And that's awesome. And we love seeing those companies that kind of come in early and really leverage 1% for the planet and their giving and their learning and their connections through the network to, you know, become these amazing companies down the road.
Yeah. And what are the types of NGOs that you work with, that you kind of connect companies with? Are they also spread out all over the world? Or are you trying to find NGOs that's in every member country that you're in? Or how does that work?
Yeah, they are spread out and they roughly map where the members are. Most of our member companies give in the country where they're based, you know, mm-hmm. in part because philanthropy generally operates that way. Most people give locally. You know, you want to kind of give where you can sort of see and touch and, you know, relate to the impact. So that's very common. There's also tax reasons, you know, giving in country is where you can get the deduction. And so, yeah, there's, you know, we often are sourcing or taking recommendations for nonprofits in the countries where we have members. And we have, you know, several thousand nonprofits at this point, and we categorize them into very sort of loose buckets of issue areas called climate or focused on climate, food, land, water, wildlife, and pollution. Obviously, there's a lot of very, you know, diversity within that. You know, take land, for example, there's so many different ways that, you know, mm-hmm. there are, you know, there's work on, you know, habitat protection, on biodiversity, you know, many different levels. And that's true across all of them.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, just asking a little bit more now when you say food, and maybe that ties back a little bit to what we're doing with Green Here around plant-based as well. Are a lot of these NGOs, how do they relate to food? Because I know food waste is like, it's a huge thing as well. So it's like food waste number one, plant-based is kind of number two in the impact that we can have on the environment. So the NGOs in that sector, like what are they focused on?
Yeah, so in that sector, we have, that is where our kind of sustainable food, regenerative agriculture, school gardens, things like that are located. And then also, and you know, I mentioned earlier, expanding our definition of environmental. And one of the things that we did as part of that is we have not in the past, we did not have food banks in our network. But in the last, I think it was 2 years ago, we really got clear on the fact that actually the diversion of food from the waste stream is, you know, not only good for feeding, you know, getting that food to people who need it, but it's also a reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. And so those food banks that are diverting food from the waste stream, we now are able to approve in our nonprofit process. And so those would fit into that food category. So, and that there's, you know, there's definitely interest in that. And I would say like the regenerative agriculture kind of young farmers, getting young farmers on the land, things like that. Those, there's strong interest in those nonprofits and those themes across our network.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And one topic I just have to ask about as well, and I mean, this is something that's talked a lot about in the media as well, in sports, when they talk about sport washing and they talk about greenwashing. Is that something that you guys control, or how do you see companies coming into you and you're like, hey, they just want to put this on their brand and they're not really doing anything? And how do you work with something like that?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about 1% for the Planet is it's like the opposite of greenwashing. No one accesses the 1% for the Planet logo unless they're giving 1% of their sales, and it's certified every year. So, you know, in a lot of ways, that's the power of our model, is that we create a way. And 1% of sales, for any of you who are not like in the business world, or like, that's a big number. You may have a year where you actually don't make a profit, but you still sell something. You're still giving 1% to the environment. And the idea behind that is that no matter what kind of a year you've had, you're still having an impact. You're still part of an economy that has an impact. And so building in that donation every year is really important. So when we put our logo, when we, you know, give our logo to members, it's because we know that it's not greenwashing. It's a really clear signal of a certified commitment at a high level. And that's brands, that's a real value, because there has been growing consumer interest, which is great, in, you know, sustainable products, sustainable brands, you know, things like that, which also does then create, you know, the sort of, you know, less good actors wanting to get in on that without doing the work. And so, you know, our logo and others have only become more important as signals of like, this isn't just someone, you know, making it look like they're doing something good. This is this is truly happening and we can certify that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And how does the certification process work?
We get proof of revenue. So, you know, there's documentation that we get from either tax returns or, you know, a certified accountant letter, you know, something that, again, is a third party report on revenues, and then documentation of the donations. So if there's an acknowledgement mm-hmm. letter from a nonprofit or something like that. And so we have to get all of that documentation, do the math, if there are currency conversions, do that, and then, you know, make sure that they're certified and then they're, you know, checked off. So it's a rigorous, simple but rigorous process.
Yeah, no, it sounds like so. And so also for people who are listening, like the majority that will be, don't have companies, mm-hmm. but you say that you also work with individuals.
Yeah.
How does it work for them then? Like, what kind of people are part of this, and why would you encourage people to join something like this?
Yeah, I love that question because this is a newer program for us. We started this in 2017, whereas we were founded in 2002. And so, you know, in some ways, we're like still really figuring out, you know, who all are the individuals. It, like our business member program, it's truly open to anyone. So again, we have like teenagers with their babysitting money to high net worth individuals. So we do have the range. And again, we like that because we really believe that everyone has that opportunity to participate. And a couple of features of individual membership that make it both accessible and a really great option is, one, for individuals, 100% of their 1% can be volunteer time. Mm. It can be, you know, financial donations, but it can be volunteer commitment.
Interesting.
You know, we really believe in that because that does make it truly more accessible. Because we, you know, we totally get that. You know, for a lot of people who have a lot to give, it's not money that they have to give. It's other sort of valuable support. So we want to make sure that that's included. We also, the way it works is that you essentially identify your 1%. We have a calculator. So if you want to do straight up 1% of your salary, you can do it that way. But what we've realized in listening to our individual members is what they most need to do is make a commitment that they're going to implement during the year and then have us there to hold them accountable. So we actually, you know, we don't verify, you know, is that truly 1%? Because we realize that doesn't matter. And we don't want to, you know, have people think that we're going to need to look at their tax returns. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's not the point. The point is to make a commitment and, you know, call it your 1%. And, you know, it may be literally, or it may be, you know, sort of more your figurative 1%. And then we have a lot of different ways that, you know, we're sort of creating opportunities for you to give to that. One is we have a Planet Impact Fund that is a way in which you can make a donation. And then it goes into a pool that's invested in, you know, climate positive investments. And then annually we give to a portfolio of nonprofits. So it's like a one simple donation. And then the money has all this power through both the investment and the annual granting. So that's one option that we make available, not just to our individual members. It's to members and non-members alike, but it is an option that's there. We do giving circles. As I mentioned earlier, we provide a lot of just food for thought over the course of the year. And then individual members can come to events and things like that. So it's a really, really great program that we would absolutely invite people into. Because again, you both join a community and gain access to some tools and resources. You continue to be able to make your own giving choices. But there's something really powerful about being part of a larger community that's committed to global change. So, and you can find information membership programs right on our website.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think it's such a great idea that it's not just giving money, but that you're opening it up for people to participate with NGOs and to give their time as well, because then you really become part of a community and you see that this is something that there are actually more people who are interested in taking care of our planet, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the community piece should not be understated for either business or individual, because I think it's not only is it more fun to do things together, but it's heartening in times, you know, these are challenging times and can feel overwhelming, can feel paralyzing, can feel isolating. And so I think, you know, 1% for the planet creates a way for people to come together around change, which creates power and momentum and it enables us to drive more change.
Oh, yeah, I like that. And in the space where you are right now, who is impressing you at the moment? Is there any organization, brand, or person that you think people should check out that you really like, that you think are making a difference?
Let's see. I mean, I could go, there are so many, but what immediately comes to mind is a organization called Sea Trees, and they're, you know, looking at and doing work around carbon sequestration in the ocean through, mm-hmm. you know, seaweed plantings and mangrove plantings. And I love, and similarly, there's the Carbon Underground, which is doing work on how, you know, how we farm and how we work with soil can be another way in which we, you know, keep carbon in the ground. And so I find that I'm super interested in the, you know, innovative nonprofits that are and companies, you know, so I could also list a bunch of companies that are, you know, coming up with additional approaches and, you know, additional implementations of solutions that we already know about to drive change. The other thing I would also say is I have been, you know, learning and feeling inspired by the amazing environmental nonprofits that are inviting and challenging us to think differently and to do work differently around, you know, how Indigenous voices and lands are recognized in the environmental movement. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really, really, again, a really powerful way in which, you know, our network pushes us to think differently and think better and think more broadly and deeply and complexly, which I know is not a word, but is, you know, because I think that's what we need to do in order to really be the best and most effective kinds of environmentalists for the future.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. And for anybody who wants to connect with you and 1% for the planet, where can they find you online?
Best place for me is LinkedIn. So if you just, you know, search me on LinkedIn, Kate Williams, 1% for the planet, you'll find me. And I do, you know, love to connect with people there and learn more and, you know, just make new connections in this great work that we share. And then 1% for the planet, yeah, our website, we're on all the social channels for 1% for the planet. Definitely, you know, we have an awesome social presence through our amazing team. So I would encourage people to check that out as well.
All right. That sounds great. Well, Kate, thank you so much for talking to me. Very, very fascinating to hear about the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
That was our episode for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. The Green Hero podcast was produced by Andrew Rojek, and I'm your host, Ricard Bjerkdal. I'll see you next week for another conversation from our colorful plant-based world. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast or share this episode with a friend. If you haven't already, you can also find Green Hero in the App Store. Download our app and start enjoying a plant-based lifestyle today. You can also find us on the web at the URL greenhero.life and on Twitter and Instagram, where we operate under the handle Green Hero Life. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.